Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. You are listening to Oblivion. It is January 30th, 2023. David, we were just talking about the Doomsday Clock last week, and they did their annual refresh of the time before Doomsday. The Union of Atomic Scientists, or some such. They've been doing it since, I don't know, the late 40s, maybe? Maybe it was early 50s. And it's the closest it's ever been, they said, largely because of the Ukraine war. 90 seconds to midnight. You know, it's kind of always been a bit of a sad sack production. you know, it's not a very dramatic... you know, they had this clock behind a, I don't know if you saw the video, it was just basically just a, I don't know, a black sheet over it, and like it was a sculpture, and pulled it off of it, and there it was, you know, there,
ta-da!
You know, stylized a clock, but yeah, we were right on point on that. You were becoming more and more worried about the doomsday impending. And the experts agree, so you're not alone. And you sent an article. Oh, there was something about a. Oh, that, I guess that was another. Yeah, to go along with the theme, Air Force General predicts war with China in 2025. So,
right. Hey, the good news is that the world can't come to an end. This year, because we've got to have a war with China in 2025.
We need to keep it low enough level so we can go full on with China.
So
I don't
see how it all works out. How these the leaders, they've got it all figured out.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're
we can escalate as much as we want in Ukraine, and we know the world won't come to an end because we have to have a war with China in 2 years. So I guess I'm off the hook.
Don't you feel secure, David, that they're taking care of things for us?
And I do.
Good.
Puts me in my place, you know, silly me forever, you know, being concerned about anything that was going on. So.
Yeah, just you know, smoke a bowl, relax, dude. It's all right.
A bowl of rice.
Just have a bowl of rice, man. Smoke a bowl of rice. That's what I do. That's probably what the Chinese do. Smoke a bowl of rice.
Well, speaking of China, did you know that Hong Kong has now banned CBD?
No. What was the... reason for that is just the general Chinese
authoritarian drug warriors.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely a critique we can have of China. We've been quite pro China as far as their COVID policy, as they've got the hardcore police thing going down there. Yeah, it sounds like your clock is
a doomsday clock at Oblivion Podcast is tolling. Is already at midnight.
It's tolling. Well, it's good knowing you, man.
We've reached Oblivion.
Zap. Like in the day after, it was like you'd see the bomb and the people that were close to it. You'd see the flash, and then you'd see the flash, then you'd see their skeleton, and then their screams as they vaporize. a very interesting phenomenon with nuclear war is the vaporized person. If you're close enough and there's so much energy that you just puff of smoke, you know. And if you're not a total puff of smoke, then the blast wave will like smash you into a little pile of dust, you know, ashes to ashes. But yeah. Speaking of more happy imagery, we had the police. You know, why talk about the bad police in China? Or we can come on home and see what the scorpion. The scorpion crew.
The latest sacrifice.
Yeah, the scorpion. What was it? The scorpion. That was the name of their group. That was called the scorpion.
Maybe it's been called the scorpions.
Yeah, hold on. It of course it got disbanded. You know, like the days ago. But for those, of course, I'm not going to watch the fucking video, man. I mean, I don't watch any of those because it's like, I can't handle it. You know, I know what's going to happen. You know, I'm not going to traumatize myself.
Yeah, you'll enjoy this. Of course, I've seen it because they put it on television constantly.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say this footage may be disturbing to some viewers, and then so they put the video on. Of course, the guy's on the ground and they're kicking him and they're beating him, and then we go back to the elite the panel of elitists sitting behind their desk, and they ask the experts, so what do you see is going on here? As though we have no idea. Like, it looks like this person is being brutally attacked. But of course, I can't know that myself because I need somebody else to tell me what's actually going on. Just like I need somebody else to tell me what's going on in Ukraine and what's going on in my own brain and my own body. But yeah, it really is horrible. And it just speaks to the apathy and the dead end that we live in. I mean, we had George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. I guess that we're coming up really on, that'd be 3 years ago, wouldn't it? Wasn't that 2020?
Yeah.
And then here we are with. Same thing happening in Memphis. As always, anytime that some kind of tragedy and really obscenity like this happens, nothing is done in Congress while they're able to easily give trillions of dollars to the military and to keep fighting wars and selling arms. They don't seem to be capable of doing anything else. And it just, how do you believe in a society where you see something like this continue to happen? And what is it that you honestly think is some kind of outcome of this is going to be, other than eventually sometime during the year, if anything gets passed, it'll be to protect the police, right? Because, for example, in Louisville, and it may even be the entire state of Kentucky, after the George Floyd protests and the outrage over Breonna Taylor, I believe the law was made where you can't insult a police officer. That's what came out of this. It's like, we're going to go out and kill people. We're going to torture them and beat them and kill them. And then we're the victims who need protecting.
Yeah, it was the task force was called Scorpion Unit, and that's who these people were. I guess they were these elite, badass, roided up black police officers You know, so yeah, I read something from Alec Baldwin, or not Alec Baldwin, but the Black Baldwin, the famous one from 50, 60 years ago, talking about when he was a kid. You know, it was like the black, this was in Harlem, the black police were the ones to avoid if you're a black person, because at least for the white cops, you were kind of like this alien, right? That they kind of,
they were also probably worried about being stigmatized as racist.
No. This was back before there was any stigmatization of being racist. This was back 50,
oh, right.
60
okay.
years
you
ago.
Didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, you didn't have to worry about that. I mean, the main thing was that the, you know, his point was that at least the white cops, I mean, they were just as bad, but they treated you like you were some kind of alien, right? That you were, you know, not one of us. So, you know, there was kind of a little distance you could get that way. But whereas the black cops would really like wail on you like a real brother, you know? So that didn't help the situation. Yeah, it doesn't really matter what the skin color. These guys have the same inculcated culture of you know, the war of the punished. They've the Punisher emblem. You know, they all the badass paramilitary stuff that these quote elite units like the Evalde. You know, yeah.
Right, boy. Now that's a great juxtaposition that you have this Tyree Nichols.
Yeah.
And what did this guy do? I mean, that hasn't even been made apparent. Like, he was driving home. They pulled him over.
Mm-hmm.
They told him to get out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically beat him to death.
Well, I mean,
meanwhile, at Uvalde,
he got away at first. So he ran away from him, and they caught up with him. And that's when they really beat him up and started pepper spraying him. They didn't start beating it up, apparently, until, like, one guy got pepper spray out and was pepper spraying him and pepper sprayed some other guy in the face. And the guy gets pepper sprayed in the face. I mean, I did see this because it had, like, a thing that didn't have the beating but had everything else. And so this was one of the things. He was, like, recovering at the back of the car, like, oh, God, I got this in my face. And that enraged him. And that's when he went over and started hauling ass on him with his baton, because he got sprayed by his, you know, friendly fire. And that really got him going, you know. And that was that for poor Tyree.
Yeah, but again, to compare that to situation in Uvalde, where the 19, 10-year-olds were shot and killed and left to bleed to death, and everyone just stood around and did nothing. And these are the people that we're supposed to recognize as heroes and are there to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
And then here we have
just a few bad apples, David. Just a few bad apples. Come on, quit being so harsh. I mean,
right. These few bad apples add up pretty quickly
to a big old rotten,
Floyd,
rotten bowl
Breonna
full
Taylor,
of shit.
Eric Garner.
Yeah.
And now, Tyree Nichols. And we both know nothing is going to become of it. Just like with the gun problem, nothing's going to get done about that. And it's just amazing that anybody takes this society seriously or thinks that it has any kind of redeeming element to it. And just to kind of go over to the gun issue, I think you'll appreciate this.
Real quick, did you hear about the other police killing there in Atlanta, the Cop City protests, and the guy got the activist got shot or killed or something? Did you hear about that?
I'm not sure I did hear about that.
Yeah, it was like protesters against this Cop City complex that they, like, a $100 million urban kind of warfare training center that the cops were making near Atlanta. That was like so they could, you know, urban resistance training place, basically, you know. And there were protesters in there. One of them was killed. Killed at Cop City, outside Cop City, I guess.
The best kind of training that you could get. Real world experience.
Yeah, indeed. There is a cool picture of a cop car on fire. I'm glad they at least got a cop car out of the protest. But so, I mean, it's... the cops are completely out of control. What's Biden going to do in a month or two? He's going to say we need 200,000 more cops, like he did.
Right.
Like he said, 100,000 for whenever.
I think that's one of Bashir's big things is that he's wanted to hire more police,
more
and
cops,
give them pay raises, and
yeah. Yeah, it's so sickening, and it's just progress is not occurring. Definitely along that line. I mean, there was the defund police thing, which of course caused widespread outrage because of bad messaging, and sure, maybe it was a bit over the top and too hard for the poor libs to handle, and of course the right wingers are going to be outraged even if you hint that maybe anything the cops ever do is bad, right? But you know, the liberal centrists, or whatever you want to call them, the main core of the ruling elite, you know, they don't really take it seriously. It doesn't affect them. Most of them are quite rich. Sure, they're outraged. You know, when you're somewhat traumatized, although I guess we're getting used to seeing black people, you know. It's become the latest internet coliseum spectacle of the police. What's the latest thing the police could have done there, you know? I mean, just think if the Uvalde, if they had really been brave people and stormed that fucking room and had a body cam of them, like, you know, murking this son of a bitch that killed all the kids, right? You know, being real heroes, you know, I've been like, hell yeah, guys, you didn't, you know, you showed you just
that would have been
spine.
Actually something
this
to,
is an appropriate
celebrate.
Situation for you to goddamn go in there and kill this motherfucker, all right?
Right.
Or,
and I will,
or here's another way of putting it. No, I don't want that, didn't want that guy killed. There was probably plenty of ways that you could have stunned grenaded that motherfucker, you know, into submission, gotten in there and taken him into custody, you know. You know, you can't expect that when a guy's like armed and shooting, you know,
right.
But anyway.
Well, I won't doubt that, there are actual acts of heroism that both the police and the first responders mm-hmm. perform.
Rare, I would say very rare.
But the problem is that those things are really irrelevant, and
right.
they can't be brought up to gloss over or to mask these utterly horrible acts of just murder.
Yeah.
And the thing that when I looked at the video of Tyre Nichols getting beaten to death, what the image was completely identical to gang violence. Right. I just like I am looking at a gang.
Yeah. Right.
Of people that are either they've found their victim and they're just going to kill somebody so they can move up the chain of command, or they're initiating someone. Right. Except in that case, they let you live. Right. They'll beat the crap out of you, but then they keep you alive. And then if you heal, it's like you've paid your dues, right? You've been toughened up, and now you can be part of the group. But there's no way to deny it, and the way that it keeps happening. The other thing, though, that I want to say about the acts of heroism is the way that we undervalue people in this society is that every day there are heroic acts,
yeah,
one kind or another. I mean, in all these natural disasters that are happening with greater frequency and more intensity because of climate change, there's always people who are not police or first responders, but they're getting into the disaster. They're doing things to save people's lives, helping people from drowning or helping rescue people if they're trapped inside of a building after a tornado. And there are all other kinds of heroic and impressive things that people do, but no attention is ever going to be put on those things because these people aren't wearing a uniform.
Yeah, and to that point, it's all kind of down to the definitions. Well, there's the propaganda that the cops are constantly putting in your face is how dangerous their job is, how important, how we're out there, you know, just to protect the public. If it wasn't for us, the thin blue line, man, you would just, the whole place would go under, man. You know,
but of course, the reality is that that's already what life is like in America. There's constant gun violence. People are getting murdered every day.
Hmm.
And then you have, I mean, you have all of the gun violence. That's basically never ending. And then the other thing is this ridiculous war on drugs, where you have the drug crisis getting worse and worse. But of course, this can only be the fault of people who aren't on the side of the police and the National Guard and don't want to secure the borders. You may have heard about these ridiculous attacks on incumbent Governor Beshear in Kentucky. You know, that border state, Kentucky, that's got, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, like several states, including Texas, which is about a fifth of the size of the entire continental United States, in between it and Mexico. But it's Kentucky's fault that all the immigrants are crossing the border illegally. And of course, all of them, to go back to the labels and the stereotypes, all of these people coming from Central America are only coming to America so they can bring their drugs in. And even the use of the term drugs is irresponsible and inadequate, because the real problem is the fentanyl. And but what you have to wonder about is, why wouldn't you start to begin to think about changing the drug laws and the drug policies? If you have all these drugs pouring into the country and they get more and more lethal, and then you have record numbers of people dying. Of course, this happened. This really got to be a big problem under the Obamacon, in which we had not one but two opioid epidemics. And I mean, nothing was done about that. So the amount of gun violence that we have, the fact that we see the police committing these brutal acts of homicide, and then the widespread overdose deaths due to drugs, it's hard to not think, wouldn't we just be better off if we had anarchy?
Anarchy. Well, I agree with you. And the stipulation of anarchy is not the chaos, but it's to plan a society based on the minimum amount of hierarchical structure, right? So whenever you've
Right, and
got an
where agreements
institution,
are consensual and not top down, which is
right,
hierarchical.
as much as possible, right? I mean, maybe there are certain situations where it would be necessary to have such a thing, but it's would be up to people to decide rather than it being imposed on them. And I think it would be very easy for people to accept not having police, because I swear there would be a big improvement in life in general. People would be more safe. I mean, basically, the things that there could have been used for, many of the things that they're used for instance, being an insurance agent information getter, for one, like there's a car wreck, or if your business has been broken into or whatever, you call the cop, and the cop comes over and he gives the official report of what occurred, right? And
Right.
that goes to the insurance people, basically. Or, it's an account of the incident that happened. And of course, they never, they rarely, if ever, it's got to be something pretty major or a major famous person or something like that. Somebody's a famous person's dog. And, when the dogs are stolen, the $40,000 a piece dogs are stolen, that, the dog walker is shot, something like that might get a little attention. Otherwise, that's all they do in that situation. And so do you really need the cop to do that? This guy marching around with his fucking gun and his taser and his weird looking outfit and his bad attitude.
Ill-fitting tactical gear, where if you could compare pictures of, say, the police in the 1990s, right, but before 9/11, where they actually look like human beings, right? I mean, it's like a person, and they are in a uniform, right? So, I mean, you can tell that they're a cop. And they have the gun and the handcuffs and a walkie-talkie, right? And that's it. And now they wear these bulletproof vests with these 10 different pockets and all kinds of other weapons and equipment that they have on their check. And it's just so obvious the way that since 9/11, our civilian population has been militarized, right? The police have been militarized. They even, in some cases, will, drive military style looking vehicles. You saw those broken out during the riot protests in 2020 over the murder of George Floyd, right? And then they have their riot gear, their helmets, where they basically look like they may as well be in the Middle East ready to attack the Taliban. And this constant mentality of war and violence and attack is just so backward, and it's uncivilized. And really, what you're talking about, to go back to the anarchy idea, with the police, it seems that they exist to be the arsonist who puts out their own fire. That they you have the police, and they exist, and you can't really deny that there is a value and a usefulness for them. But then, when you ask, like, what is the value of the police, it's so that they can respond to all of these dangerous and disastrous situations that the government itself perpetuating. And to go back to the problem at the border, I mean, the whole reason that you have all of these people coming from Central America and desperately trying to enter the United States is the war on drugs. Because especially in Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador and apparently much of Mexico, these places are ruled by the drug cartels. And so people are fleeing because there's all of this violence and there's not really, there aren't really any options other than you can be a member of a gang, you can work for the cartel. If you're a woman, you can be a prostitute, or you can do some sort of menial, low-paying labor, or you have to leave. And Americans have this elitist American exceptionalism, bigoted view of the rest of the world, where it's like, well, of course, things are all awful and horrible in Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador and these other places because they're not America, right? And so just because they are these other people and they live in this other place, it must automatically be this horrible place. And you can't get people to actually think about, but why would they have all of these problems? And why would things be so bad down there?
All I want is them to stop taking our jobs.
I mean, there's right, right, and that belligerent,
take a job.
Vilifying attitude about take a why job. They're coming here. They're coming here to. They're basically bad, right? The vilifying. They're here to take your jobs, and they're here to sell the fentanyl. But really. If there were no war on drugs, like if drugs had just been legalized or never made to be illegal,
right.
Which we're really talking Industrial Revolution, early 20th century, the whole idea that drugs are bad and illegal and this is what life is about stopping drugs, is that's when it all started. I mean, for most of human history, that's not been the mentality about drugs. There's no reason to think that a place like Guatemala or Honduras or El Salvador or anywhere else in the world couldn't be a perfectly nice place to live, which is, this is where these people are born. So it's their home. They have families and neighborhoods and communities, and they can farm and they can do all of these other basic things that human beings do to, produce the goods and services that they need to live and to make a living. But we act as though.
But David, I want my cheap bananas. I don't want these fucking lazy specs to goddamn be laying around and not make my bananas.
I think we just got a episode title there, Cheap Banana.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the anarchist. World would, of course, it would have to be internationalist, of course. I mean, you would, unless you advocated for this to be a worldwide movement, unless it was fostered, it would be, you know, just crushed right away. I mean, this was Catalonia, Spain. It was quite the experiment, but it was fraught with being attacked by, you know, the Brits and the, or it was, you know, what was it, the Franco, was, you know, the ultra-nationalist, fascistic right-wing side, and then in Catalonia, you know, it was basically breakaway, anarchist, left communist experimentation and quite wide across the culture. But it was just completely crushed by the West in league with Germany. Germany was in there big time. You know, Guernica was the bombing of. It's kind of the first. It was the first sort of civilian sort of war crime that just, you know, of course it was quickly normalized. World War II, it was just both sides were going whole hog on civilian populations. It was total war. So yeah, that's what can occur if you want to try to do things in a radical direction. You're going to get your ass killed. Which it's sickening to think of, but I think that this is the kind of reality, unless you can shift consciousness enough in the populace, which seems to be rather a remote, more and more remote possibility as the years go by, right? You know, in our political,
right,
in our memory, I mean, what do we have to show as far as, quote, progress, at least from our perspective? precious little. Yeah, I mean, sure that there's a degree of acceptance, a little less hideous for people if they're gay or whatnot. But overall, it's a very oppressive atmosphere.
Right. But again, I have to go back to the war in Ukraine and this, everybody apparently is on board. I mean, I don't hear any groups. I don't hear any media outlets saying that this is not a good idea. And I just have to I have to wonder about any group that says that it's for equality and inclusion and that you shouldn't discriminate and attack other people, but then it's unconditionally supportive of the most extreme form of violence of all. And it does make me begin to think that really these other groups are just like all other groups, right? That the gays and the blacks and the transgender people and the women are just groups of people that are advocating for themselves, but they don't really want to bring, they're not serious about wanting a world with no violence, period, right? They're typical in that they only don't want any violence committed against them. Right. So if you are punching me in the face, that's wrong. Right. But violence itself isn't wrong because I endorse it and I do. I agree with violence solves problems. Right. That's a topic that we've had with Hollywood and the guns and the Rust shooting and how that is a mindset that is reinforced through our entertainment among other avenues. But just to kind of tie together an important point that I want to reinforce with regard to the police. If you didn't have a war on drugs in the United States, right, there would be considerably less violence. Right. So when you think about, well, we've got to have the cops because if somebody tries to shoot me or breaks into my home or there are these dangerous people running around, who's going to protect me? Right. I mean, I can't stand up to these gangs. I don't want a bunch of people with machetes coming after me. And it's like, but the laws are exactly what is empowering these people. I mean, that's where the violence is coming from. And then if you want to think about Uvalde, this insanity of saying that we have to have laws and that people can't just do whatever they want, but you can go buy a semi-automatic AR-15 with unlimited rounds and magazines simply because of Second Amendment. And that's the end of that conversation and debate. I mean, that's definitely a major problem with the violence that we have. So you the combination of not doing anything to deny people access to guns, which people do not need to have. There is no valid reason for regular, ordinary people to have guns, just like there isn't any valid reason that people should have anesthetics or that they should have uranium, right? Like, what are you doing this? Why do you need to have this? And the person says, "So I have the freedom to have it." Yes, but to do what, right? And why? So you have this proliferation of the guns, and then you have a war on drugs, which it's undeniable that this is the cocktail that sparks all of this violence.
Would you call it a drug cocktail, man?
There you go, man.
Yeah.
That's too bad. It would be better off if it was a drug cocktail. But that's just it. I mean, we could have a society that is based around peace and wellness, right? And so that's what your economy would be based on, right? All the goods and the products and the services would all be about, yeah, in this society, everybody is peaceful, everybody is healthy, they take care of themselves. The focus is on feeling well and feeling good. And we're still stuck in this medieval church dominated morality of it is wrong to feel good. Mm-hmm. It is wrong to be happy, right? The pain mongering, I've got to suffer and mm-hmm. I've got to be tense and nervous all the time so that I'm incentivized.
You gotta compete.
Right. I gotta be motivated. I've gotta get out there and compete.
Grind.
And I just don't hear any pushback against any of this. And it really comes through again in the support for escalating the war in Ukraine, with Germany now saying they're gonna give their tanks and Poland can give the tanks that they have. We're going to be arming Ukraine and even more than we already have been. And so this is likely to then cause the Russians to use more advanced weapons. They will also escalate their efforts in Ukraine. And of course I don't know what you see, but everything that I see is trying to make it seem like everything's going bad for Russia. Nothing is working. Over 100,000 Russian soldiers have been killed. All of the plans have gone wrong. And while this may be true, what's being left out of all of this is that Russia is still fighting the war, right? And that's what the problem is. So it's kind of irrelevant that maybe things haven't gone as easily for Putin as Putin initially expected, because the problem is that the war is continuing. And if things were, it seems to me that if things were going as badly for Russia as the American and European media make it seem, that Russia would have withdrawn from Ukraine, and that they would have made some sort of rationale that their objectives had been completed, and they would claim victory, and that it would be over.
Well, David, I think a large part of the problem is your negative attitude. I mean, what I think will happen here, I'm very optimistic about it, is that we're going to start the campaign now with our tanks, and we're going to roll across Ukraine, and we're going to be in Stalingrad before winter hits. And, you know, I think we will be victorious.
And then we can, that's great. We can seize all of Russia's weapons and then we can use them against China.
First Russia, then China.
But if you can go on to,
it's a pretty long
really
road.
Anything on social media, if you can find me a news source, or if you can find me a place on social media where anyone is saying that the fighting has to stop, the killing has to stop, the violence has to stop, and that all that the United States and NATO is doing is escalating the conflict. And really, if you are on the side of Ukraine, which I suppose is where I would say that I stand. I mean, I definitely am on Ukraine's side, in the sense that I think that Russia is 100% wrong. And I think it's right. Horrible what's happening to the people in Ukraine. But that's just it, right? Is that escalating the conflict really only means more Ukrainians are going to get killed, right? And they're going to suffer. One thing that I did read, where there was a little bit of realism involved in the reporting, is that already one third of Ukraine's economy has been destroyed. And so a whole nother summer of fighting, it's hard not to imagine that really what you're going to see is more towns and cities in Ukraine basically destroyed, the supply routes bombed and ruined, and more Ukrainians being killed. So in terms of what's actually being accomplished, that's what you're going to see. And again, the cycle.
Well, they want it to be a forever war, and
exactly. That's exact with a Christmas fireplace crackling, and Biden sitting there with his heart on, talking to Zelensky in his military outfit. We're gonna be there with you as long as it takes. Right? It's just the greatest thing ever, right? I fooled everybody again. We got out of Afghanistan, and so you think, well, hey, all right, we're
making
finally
a little progress here.
We're gonna take a break from the war, and I'll hope that I'm gonna get you into another one. And I would bet you that part of the reason that we got out of Afghanistan is that the intelligence reports were that Russia was in fact mobilizing to invade Ukraine, right? And so the Biden and the Pentagon were thinking, well, hot damn, like we don't really need. Why be bogged down in Afghanistan fighting a bunch of warlords from 3,000 years ago when we can get into a bigger conflict with Russia? And now that there's this talk of,
well,
of China.
Just quickly about Afghanistan. Yeah, I think that we left there just because the writing was on the wall with that. I mean, it was, you know, the Taliban had already has been slowly gaining back the country. It was on a razor's edge. They finally, I guess, the military did see many other possibilities that would be more interesting to them. You know, the war on terror had pretty much.
The ratings were low.
Yeah, the ratings were low. The generals had gotten all the medals they could possibly squeak out of it. Those kind of cynical. That party was winding down, and of course the war isn't still ongoing. We're hardcore sanction warfare going against and of course the Taliban, rightfully, you know, although the U.S. forces in Afghanistan, as far as being better with women, or you know, that's the main complaint about the Taliban. They weren't any better. If anything, they were worse. So it's not, you know, it's not like the people that well, basically all like progressive or communistic or tendencies were snuffed out after the Mujahideen took over. You know, anything liberal or Western was just killed out at that point. So from that point on, it was basically the Taliban style culture was all that was left. And you know, so I mean, that's not going to get any better anytime soon. But I mean, of course, the elites don't give a fuck about, you know, if they gave a fuck about women, they wouldn't be doing these sanctions, which are only going to, you know, hurt the women and children of that country. And a bunch of them are going to starve.
I'm really glad that you stuck with Afghanistan and you're bringing these points up, because the real story with Afghanistan, and this again gets back to how none of the groups, liberals, women, gays, blacks, no one is having an honest and a serious conversation about violence. The real story of Afghanistan is that both parties, both Republicans and Democrats, knew that there was no way we could win the war. They knew that we weren't winning and that we were not going to win, right? But they both persistently lied to the public, right? And of course, the media also lied to the public, because it's the media's job is to make sure that the government is telling the truth. That's why you have the media.
Well, I mean, that's the you know, that's the propagandistic reason they're there, right? That's what they believe themselves. What is the real purpose? Well, it's to be a stenographer for the powerful, to support the status quo. And
that's perfect perfect word for it. It's the rubber stamp.
Yeah.
Right. And this is what's known as corruption, right? Where there isn't any independence and autonomy among the institutions, so that they're actually playing the roles that they're supposed to play. It gets back to what you were saying the other week, where there isn't any honest foundation, right, in what these institutions and what these people are doing, right? That you, what you don't want to see happening is that the media and the government are saying the same thing, and they're talking about everything in the same way. Just like the government is all excited about having another war to fight, and then the media, when it talks about sending tanks to Ukraine, it's this jerk off party about, and this is what this tank does and this is how it operates, but then these kinds are even more sophisticated and it can do this and this and this. It's like, wow.
So that was the so-called reporting
awesome
you were saying. That's what you were saying, was that kind of stuff, or so-called coverage of it, was that how the one tank is better than the other? Wow.
Well, right. I mean, basically all of the articles that I read about how United States and Germany and NATO are going to be sending tanks to Ukraine is all about this epideictic praise and hype of this weaponry, that these tanks are really amazing and they can do this, and then this tank is even better than this other tank, but it'll take longer for the training to happen, but we've got our expert people over there to train the Ukrainians, and we're supporting the cause of freedom. Oh, and that's another good thing to bring up, is that Biden, in saying that we're going to be sending tanks to Ukraine, says, oh, this is about freedom and the right for people to have their freedom and not to be under the dark clouds of tyranny. And so in this culture that where we're always bashing the 60s and the counterculture, right, the all of our causes are driven by these utopian ideals, right? This is about freedom, right? This, of course, isn't about escalating a war and killing people, right? And if you really want to have an honest conversation about freedom, freedom involves using your brain, right? It involves your imagination, right? And your willingness to think, right? And to acknowledge that you have the capacity to think, right? Why should I be a slave? Why should I be an indentured servant? Why should I have to sit here and suffer and toil and starve when I watch all of these wealthy aristocrats live it up? Why does it have to be this way? Right? And it doesn't have to be this way. But of course, that aspect of freedom, that version of freedom as what it actually is something that people don't like. That they will, though, get excited about freedom when it means that you get to escalate a war and go out there and to be killing people. Yeah, in terms of the media coverage with the decision to send the tanks, it's all been about talking about how great the weapons are, right? Which is to stir people up and to appeal to their pride and to make them once again believe in their military and this insane spending of $800 billion. It's worth every penny. We've got it, and then we'll make even better weapons. And then to go back to the militarization of the peace, really the big reason for these insane military budgets and to keep making all of these weapons and equipment is so that eventually they'll be hand-me-downs and they'll be used by all of your domestic law enforcement, right? So that you can just use all of this stuff against your own people, right? And you can, for example, in the Iraq War under Petraeus and this whole idea of going granular, right, in order to root out the insurgency, the ultimate goal of that was to learn how to do that in your own cities, right, in your own country, right? How can you just infiltrate everything on the most basic, right next door, walking among everyone on the sidewalk, just that kind of embeddedness of surveillance and police presence. But certainly, basically completely void from any of these perspectives on what's going on in Ukraine. There's no even consideration of will things get out of control? Is this really a good idea? Are there any risks to escalation? Right? Of course, it's Ronald Reagan dumbed down, right? The only risk is not to escalate. If we don't escalate this war, then Putin will take over Ukraine, then he'll invade Poland, then he'll take over all of Europe, and then none of us will have our freedom. Right? There's no consideration that, and if you keep arming Ukraine, you're just going to perpetuate a stalemate. You're going to have more and more Ukrainians who are going to get killed. And if you're never willing to make some sort of settlement or some kind of achieve some kind of ceasefire with Russia, that you're going to wind up with a nuclear war. Right? And then that means all of us
Ceasefire!
die.
Ceasefire! All right, man.
And meanwhile, in this nation of freedom and the good guys, we got to see yet another police murder.
Yeah, man. Sacrifice, another sacrifice. It's what we got to do every once in a while to feel alive here in the great U.S. of A.
Well, it looks like the clock has run out on the Oblivion podcast. For my co-host, David Miller, this is Dr. David W. Overby, and you've been listening to the Oblivion podcast.
You are free to listen to next week's show.
Tick tock, tick tock.